this time. And welcome, everyone. We have a guest. Would you please introduce yourself, Cynthia?
Sure. I am Cynthia Shriver. I am here to talk a little bit about our Certified Affordable Housing Provider program in Madison County.
Thank you. We look forward to your presentation.
Thank you.
I want you to know that when I discussed this possibility with the staff, everyone was excited.
And, oh, good.
And Mr. Parkinson said he thought it was a great idea. So both staff and board members are very excited to hear your presentation.
Thank you.
Do we have any other people who are guests today?
No, me.
Okay. Would you please introduce yourself?
Molly Wolf. Work in the Treasurer's Department.
Molly, welcome. Thank you.
Thank you.
So much. And, of course, I'm so grateful Mr. Ezra is here with us today. He's done such a great job on the resolution that we'll be looking at this afternoon. Roll call. Mr. Parkinson.
Present.
Mr. Chapman. Present. Mr. Moore.
Present.
Ms. Novosich is very ill. I spoke with her today. And she regrets that she cannot be here, but would like to, during the discussion of the resolution, talk by telephone, if that's agreeable to the board members. Also, Mr. Michael was, of course, intending to come on Tuesday, and we had to postpone due to sickness. And he already had tickets to fly to the Bahamas for the wedding of one of his best friends. So he extended his regrets. We've talked about our guests. I will entertain a motion for the approval of the minutes from the last meeting.
Motion to approve minutes from the last meeting.
Second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay. Do we have any public comments today? Public comments. Seeing no public comments, I'll move at this time for our treasurer's report. I know he's going to be ably represented by Mr. McCray today.
Thank you. I'm going to do my best. For real estate tax year 2016, all our installment dates have been completed. We're sending out our certified notices this week to taxpayers with unpaid real estate taxes. The delinquent taxes will be published in local newspapers by the end of January and the first week of February. We've made 10 real estate distributions this year and distributed $394,658,900.73, which is 95.51% of the taxes extended. Last year at this time, we collected 94.49%, so we had over a 1% jump in what we've collected, which is always good when you see more people able to pay their taxes in a more timely manner. The next real estate tax distribution is scheduled for January 25th, and this year's tax sale is scheduled for February 20th. We had a lot of prepayments this year. Most of you probably were aware of that. It was on the news and all over the newspapers that people were trying to take advantage of because of the new tax cut thing. Everybody was wondering if they would be able to claim this year's taxes or next year's taxes this year if they prepaid them on time. That we really can't say whether they will be able to or not. We had a lot of a big influx of cash and a lot of people in to pay. This year we collected $7,410,000 in prepayments. And last year we had collected roughly $500,000. So we were very, very busy and very unexpected. So, but we always like to collect people's money, whether they want to pay early or not. So it's always nice for people when we can collect a little extra money. And I think that'll show in our taxes extended next year. We'll have a really big jump in the very beginning of the season. So other than that, that's all I've got for you. If you have any questions.
Questions for Mr. McCray?
So, if I could,
yeah, sure.
Those prepayments were made in 2017 for 2018 taxes?
Correct.
And that was to take advantage of lower tax rates somehow? Is that
well, so with the new tax plan, you may have seen that they changed the amount that you could claim with your local and state property tax, your state and local property taxes. So people are just trying to get ahead of those exemptions to see if they could claim more exemptions. Since this year, they can claim more exemptions than potentially next year. Yeah, they're trying to take advantage of, potentially using that as an exemption this year because they were either unsure or thought that they could take advantage of that. So, yeah. Obviously, we really can't tell anyone if they will be able to because we're not CPAs, but we're happy to collect their tax money as early as they want to pay us. So.
If I understand correctly, Mr. Moore, there were about a gazillion people that got telephone calls from their tax advisors.
Yeah, that's right.
Telling them they should probably pay early, thinking that they would be able to get a better tax break paying their 2018 and 2017.
I think a lot of people thought that with this year, with the opportunity cost, with interest rate is still relatively low, even if they had the money to invest, they're not necessarily missing out on much if they had the money, the liquid money, to be able to pay their taxes for next year. In case they're able to take advantage of that and get a higher return this year, they should, you know, some tax advisors were advising people to do that. So, like I said, we can't tell whether or not that they will be successful in that endeavor, but if they had the liquid money there and available, then a lot of tax advisors said, go ahead and pay it, and we'll see where the chips may lay. So,
additional questions for Mr. McCray?
Sure. Yeah. Did they pay like an estimated tax from just basically what they paid last year?
That's right. Yeah, we based it on last year's, and we let them pay up to 105% of last year's in case they suspected that their assessment would go up. So some people paid up to 105% higher. So basically, if they do actually pay more than their tax bill, if their tax bill doesn't go up and stays the same, or if it goes up higher than 5%, those people that paid that will be either issued a refund. They'll get a letter that says we can either apply this to the next year's taxes or we can issue a refund. So
we got a lot of calls and we just referred them all to you.
Yeah.
Why you were going to figure it out.
So yeah.
The big catch in that is the law says that the taxes must be assessed in 2017 in order to be paid for 2017. Well, we assessed them, but the assessments aren't final until the border review closes. It is some of the financial advisor's opinion that I heard. So as to whether that assessment is actually final when we assess it or when the border review is done with it, is where the question lies as to whether that will work or not. So,
and that's kind of how we refer people to. We said, well, right, if you want to know if the assessment's been finalized, then you have to call the assessor's office, and that's them. I can't tell you whether it's been finalized, but a lot of people had said, well, they're saying that the residential is finalized, but commercial is not finalized. And because commercial is not finalized and residential is, it still hasn't quite made it through the total process anyway.
Right. I figure that out later.
Yeah. So, well, that's up to your CPA to argue or your attorney to argue with with the powers that be. So,
any additional questions for Mr. McCray? Ms. Debbie Ming Mendoza, County Clerk.
Thank you, Chairman. My report's going to be much shorter because the County Clerk and the Treasurer are very competitive offices. But the last day to file levies from the taxing districts has come and gone. That was December 26th. All 168 taxing districts did file timely. We have their levies. I'm actually waiting for the great debate to end as to when the assessment cycle is finished so that we can start calculating the tax rates. We continue to make mobile home corrections up until the sale, which haven't been that many in the last few days. So when do your register letters go out?
They are actually going out, I believe, today.
So yeah. Next week we'll... volume might pick up on trying to get paid before they're sold. But other than that, we're calm and waiting for the extension cycle to actually begin.
Any questions for Ms. Ming Mendoza? Amy Meyer, recorder.
Thank you, Chairman. I believe that you have your graphs, which indicate where we are with regard to deeds of conveyance. And historically, you can see over the past 5 years that we continue to rise in our deeds of conveyance. So our numbers over from last month is year before last, in December, we had 769 deeds of conveyance come through. This year, we had 814. And if you look at the top of that page with the yearly totals, you can see that our yearly totals continue to rise. So we do continue to have additional deeds of conveyance coming through, which is always a good thing for the county. With regard to the Liz Pendens and the notice of foreclosure, those are slightly down over last year. The judicial deeds, we did have some judicial deeds that come through. That's more just to educate you as to seeing what we've got coming through, but those don't necessarily come through in any particular cycle where it would be useful to see month overs, but that's just to let you know. And with regard to the foreclosures, we had a very high number of foreclosures that came through. Tax deeds. And that's what we would expect. You can see that those tax deeds as well come through kind of in clumps. And if you look at those lines, it said we had 143 tax deeds that came through basically in a clump in December, but we are still down. Our totals for 2016, the tax deeds was 302, and we have less of those coming through this year, 259, and so that does bode well for us as well. Those are good figures. Additionally, previously I had told you that we were instituting the MyDEC, which was the electronic system for collection of P-taxes, and it was our plan at that point in time that we would be seeing additional electronic deeds come through. The electronic deeds, nobody has to show up. There's a certain amount that is paid for the provider that sends them through, almost like FedEx, and they come through right through the system. We can reject them immediately. We can check them, and they go out. So I did prepare a graph that would indicate to you, and we can pass these around as well. These are the electronic recordings. We've been tracking these as well since we started to institute. If you look at April was when we instituted the MyDEC system. And what I had said previously is we've seen a consistent about a 0.5% increase monthly in the number of electronic deeds that comes through, which isn't a lot, but it has been so consistent that what that indicates to me is that the patrons that we are using, that we're dealing with regularly, they're catching on and they're starting to realize that with the electronic MyDEC system, it's much easier for them to start. Well, it was impossible to process through with the electronic deeds. We could do electronic documents, but not deeds. So this would indicate an increase in our electronic deeds coming through. Further, with regard to the monthly report that I'll be presenting at the board meeting, I've gone over the deeds conveyed. With regard to the money that we are collecting in our various fees, we have a recorder automation fund. Last month, we collected just over $24,000 in the automation fund. The automation fund, as I indicated previously, is a fund that is just to be used for automation within the office. It was something that was passed by Governor Edgar many years ago. So those monies are used for automation within our office. There's also the subscription fees and the sale of products, which was $20,000. That's something that we like to see consistently increase. Those subscription fees, we have a Laredo service. We do have a few other services. What those are is it's something from our vendor to allow patrons to come in and be able to access the documents that we have electronically available in our collection. As that collection of electronic documents grows, the usefulness of the subscription service to our providers grows, as well as their ability to print documents, which we also get copy fees from that subscription. So the more records that we can put into our Laredo subscription service, the better that it is for the people that like to access our records from their office, and the better it is in our ability to generate subscription fees.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
If allow me to encapsulate, it sounds as if the economy continues to improve based upon your deeds of conveyance.
In Madison County, we are continuing to see growth, and that's also evident from the amounts that we collect in our taxes. Like I said, we collect the transfer taxes, and that's basically a snapshot of the amount of money that is changing hands in Madison County for real estate transactions. We collect 1.5% of that. 0.5 goes to us. The other 1% goes to the state. And of that, we've noticed about a 50% increase over last year in the amount of revenue that we've collected through the P taxes.
Yes.
So, yes, that would be another indicator, Mr. Chapman.
Thank you.
Yes.
And let me also ask, it seems like the rise in tax deeds that are automated by a 0.5% per month seems to be a good sign, too, that people are catching on to the system.
Absolutely. And I believe that this is a system that I think the assessor's office, I know Mr. Goderman can speak to that, but it's from the state, so it's mm-hmm. to assist with their offices, or presumably to assist as well.
Very good. Would there be anything to add to that, Joe? Or
I don't want to say we're forced, but we were put on the MyDEC system as of the 1st of January in our office as well, so the electronic deeds that come through Amy's office, once they're done recording them and making any corrections that they need to make before they're recorded, they allow us access to them. Mm-hmm. They do something that finalizes them for their process, then they show up on our computer screens. My research techs then, they have to still have to research the deeds, so that part of the process continues on. But we report now to the state all the electronic deeds that she gets. All we have to do is check those over and add our assessment information to them. The ones that aren't electronic, then we have to enter those from the beginning in that MyDeck system. We were doing it in a different system before, so it will reduce some of the data entry in our office. However, we still have to check those even after they get through Amy's office. We check for different stuff than Amy's people do, so we still have to check the information, add a little bit to it, and then we finalize it, and then the state can actually see it.
If I understand correctly, the system's functioning as designed. The automation doesn't do away with the human component of checking that the information is correct.
Right.
But by and large, it is working and it's an improvement. Would that be a fair statement?
So, yeah. It's real new to us because we couldn't even see it until the week after we got back from the holidays. So that was the first we actually saw of the system, but it is working and it is going to speed up. If nothing else, it will speed up the process of getting the deeds to the state because we'll have a lot less. The more Amy gets signed up to do electronic deeds, we'll have a lot less of those that we have to enter the whole green sheet or the whole P-Tax form. So, so it will speed up getting them to the state.
Very good. Anything to add, Amy?
No, thank you, Chair.
Any questions for the recorder? Don?
I don't understand. I'm just kind of curious about whenever you get a deed of conveyance, do you have like a certain amount of time that you're required to have it recorded, like a certain window that 48 hours or a week or?
Well, we don't have any requirements on that, but the banks and lenders certainly do. Under the Dodd-Frank Act, there were some significant constraints that were put on them for the timeliness of the recording of documents. So once those documents have been signed, they need to be put on record. I believe it's 3 days. There is some time for mailing. But yes, and so we do in our office, anybody that brings in a document by 2 o'clock, it will go on record that day. So our title companies are aware of that, and we've instituted that procedure for about 3 years. So as long as they get it here, it's on record.
That probably answers my second question that I've asked the assessor's office is, do you ever receive calls from people saying, where's the deed of conveyance? And you say, well, it's not in the system yet. But it sounds like there's going to be pretty much...
No, we usually don't.
If that's going on, I want to be called about it, because if it's not in our system and it's been put on, then that's something I want to know about immediately.
Okay, thank you.
Any additional questions for recorder or impart for Mr. Dodderman at this time? County Assessor report.
Chairman, 2016, we're still correcting tax bills. We'll be doing that right up until the treasurer says we can't do it anymore, which is right around the tax sale usually, a couple days before they lock us out, and that's all we can do. 2017, we're renewing exemptions. We continue to get those in, and we do those on a daily basis. We're also doing, that we sent out a lot of corrections for names and addresses. Basically, the owner address, we are still getting those back with owner address forms for corrections, so we got a lot of that going on. Our research techs are processing the deeds for December, so that's right on track, and right behind them, our name changes for the declarations are also being processed for December. GIS people are making map changes. They're a little bit farther behind, but that's normal there in November, deed changes, map changes. 2018 quad work, we're up to section 21 in Godfrey. There's 36 sections. So acreage wise, we're over halfway, but a number of parcels were right just under halfway yet through Godfrey. New Douglas, we started an extra crew out in New Douglas this week so we can get a little bit more of the quad going right now. So that's pretty well on track for this year. And then I had a mention about the MyDeck system, but we already talked about that. when we get ready to talk about the resolution, I do have some things to add. So.
Yes, sir.
All right.
Thank you. We'll be looking forward to your comments. Are there questions for Mr. Dodderman at this time? See no questions or comments from Mr. Dodderman. Ms. Powers, Board of Review, welcome.
Thank you. We are waiting for signed stipulations for at least two appeals, and we are waiting to hear back on four appeals to see if the attorneys have come to an agreement before we mail out the remainder of our decisions. The intent to equalize will be published on Friday, February 2nd. And we will do the enterprise zone once the multipliers have been calculated and applied. We continue to work upstate appeals, and we continue to process certificate of errors. The IT department has started processing cleanup reports for senior free state exempt dockets for our review, and we are right on schedule to be done no later than March 15th.
Wow. Sounds like you're doing great.
Thank you.
Any questions for Board of Review today? IT report.
Thank you. We rolled the CAMA and the mobile home data for 2018, which then kind of starts that 2018 cycle for both of those. Joe had an assessor's meeting last month. We did a lot of printing for that, different various things that he was handing out to all the different assessors who attended. And finally, with the treasurer's office, they are getting ready to get ready for the tax sale. So they had to send out delinquent letters for all the delinquent upcoming taxes. So we prepared that file for them, worked with their vendor who will get that file, print it, create the certified letter that goes out for all those people.
Very good. So, thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
Any questions for our IT representative today? Is there any additional reports that we need to have at this time? Have we overlooked anything, forgotten anything? Okay, reports is finished. Any unfinished business today? Unfinished business. New business. Purchase requests. I believe they're with Mr. Moore at this time. He's very adroit at asking questions about purchases, so I'm looking forward to see if he has any.
I like that word.
Adroit?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He always has enlightening words.
Every week, man, it's
I go home and say them, and my family's like, what the heck are you talking about? It's a Phil word.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much, Mike. That's thoughtful of you to say that. You know, I'm in very great company here, very intelligent and highly trained people, and so I like to maintain. Yes, I am. I was including you. So I like to use words like that. Any questions about the purchase requests, Mr. Moore?
Well, now that you said some, I called a few department heads before who had questions on it and had them answered. Is this your note here? What is this about the...
Forgot that I was writing on the... kind of wondering what those were.
I talked to Mr. Dorn about that, and they just make sure they're aware of these IT purchases, and he says they are, basically.
For the Nexo pads or whatever?
The ThinkPad type things.
The ThinkPads.
And I talked to Mr. Dogman earlier about a car that, I'm thinking, that 2008 Chevy Impala brakes. That's why I asked the question. He explained that it is one of his vehicles that you need to have maintenance on it. So I don't have any questions on this.
Very good. And are you in accord with purchasing these things, sir?
Yes, sir.
I will entertain a motion for the approval of the purchase request at this time.
Make a motion to approve the purchase request.
We'll entertain a second. Mr. Parkinson seconds. All in favor, Mr. Moore?
Aye.
Mr. Parkinson?
Aye.
Mr. Chapman votes aye. Thank you very much. Trustee report. I'm not seeing the trustee report. Oh! Here we are. All in favor of accepting the resolution for the trustee report, I will entertain a motion for it, for approving the resolution. Oh, well, I will read it.
Yeah.
What is it?
I did that last time. Everybody said, cool, but I guess you want to hear me read. So I'm going to read. Whereas the County of Madison has undertaken a program to collect delinquent taxes and to perfect titles to real property in cases where the taxes on the same have not been paid pursuant to 35 Illinois CS 201/21 Delta and 235 Alpha, formerly Chapter 120, Section 697 Delta and 716 Alpha, Illinois Revised Statute 1987. And whereas, pursuant to this program, the County of Madison has acquired an interest in the real estate described on the attached list, and it appearing to the Property Trustee Committee that it would be in the best interest of the county to dispose of its interest in said property, and whereas, the parties on the attached list have offered the amount shown, and the breakdown of these amounts have been determined as shown, therefore, your Property Trustee Committee recommends the adoption of the following resolution. Be it resolved by the County Board of Madison County, Illinois, that the Chairman of the Board of Madison County, Illinois, be authorized to execute deed of conveyance of the county's interest or authorize the cancellation of the appropriate certificate, certificates of purchase, as the case may be, on the attached described real estate for the amount shown on the attached to be dispersed according to law. Adopted by roll call vote the 17th of January 2018.
I have to admit, I didn't see this in advance. Was this on posted, given to us?
I don't remember that either.
It should have been on, and it is the resolution that we approve every month based upon the.
I think it's that standard one.
Okay.
Items noted on the back sheet. Would you like to sign, Mr. Moore?
Yeah.
I remember when he said certificate or certificates.
He did ask me to read it. I wanted to do it the right way.
Can I just glance at it? May I just see?
Yes, please do. Okay, that takes care of the trustee report. All in favor, Mr. Moore, are you aye?
Aye.
Mr. Parkinson?
Aye.
Mr. Chapman votes aye. Resolution authorizing billing costs for township assessor services. Let me, as a prelude to this, to catch everybody up to speed, because we have a couple of people who may be new to us. The problem that this committee found was that a resolution passed July 15, 2009 doesn't distribute assessment costs fairly amongst the townships. And this problem in the future may be exacerbated by the fact that coterminant townships to certain municipalities, those townships may dissolve. And so those costs would necessarily accrue to the county to pay. And so, currently, this resolution stipulates that if townships can't complete their assessments, they may request the Madison County's assessor's assistance. It reads in part, the billing of township assessor services at 50% of the rates for the quadriennial reassessment services and at 75% of the rates for the non-quadriennial year services. A number of members of the committee have indicated this current practice seems unfair. Townships that currently pay the full amount for their assessments also pay varying portions of the township costs using the Madison County Assessor's assistance. For example, Godfrey Assessor's Office has a complement of two, which does no assessing, yet Godfrey's last assessment costs the county taxpayers over $75,000. This resolution today suggests a possible solution. The proposed resolution will end these loopholes in the future. Starting February 1st, 2018, all townships and municipalities desiring assessment services will pay 100% of the cost. Hence, all government entities will bear the full cost of their own services rendered if they desire to use the county. And I would also like to note many thanks to Mr. Ezra. Take a bow, sir.
Thanks.
and to Mr. Joe Dotterman, our chief assessor, for the excellent work that they did in the wording of this resolution. Without them, this wouldn't be possible. And I also want to thank them for their considerable research, because the law has changed on January 1st. the state law changed, which allows whatever resolution we pass concerning the cost of assessment services to be ironclad. They will, the townships and or municipalities will absolutely have to pay what we ask them if they want to use our services. In addition, I will pass around to the committee members to give you an idea of what this has cost us in the from 2013 to 2016, over $250,000. To be precise, $263,884.14 is what it's cost us. And this information was provided by Mr. Dotterman. And
can I make a comment?
Mr. Parkinson.
In doing this, a lot of thoughts went into this. And some of your smaller communities that may not have as much money that rely on this, their costs may go up a little bit. But they're going to have to look at the fact, too, that if you're not having to pay $70,000 for a community like Godfrey, that bill is being passed around to everybody else in the county. So it may balance out. It may actually become a reduction. We don't know. But it doesn't seem fair to me that the residents of Granite City pay 100% of our assessments and still have to kick in money to pay for other communities who don't. So we're getting double taxed.
Did you have any comments on this, Mr. Moore?
No, I didn't.
I asked one question. Is prior to January, was it state law or was it, I assume, law, state law, that the municipalities or townships didn't have to pay 100%?
No, it was due to this resolution. However, the reason that the resolution today reads the way it does, thanks to the efforts of Mr. Ezra, is because there are so many townships that are dissolving. The old law, the municipality, there was some question of whether they'd have to pay anything, and that cost would just be assumed by the county. This resolution totally ends that possibility. And in fact, a future fact is, according to Mr. Dotterman, that if the Alton Township had dissolved, and Alton then became a municipality that we're providing services to, it would have cost us $500,000 to provide those services to the municipality of Alton. And this resolution is basically letting the townships know that if you do dissolve and you're coterminous with the municipality, expect to pay full service for full amount for assessor service if you call on the county. Would that be fair to say, Mr. Dotterman?
Yes. We're no longer going to split that cost up amongst everybody in Madison County. The community that doesn't take care of their own is going to have to pay their own bill.
If I may, from the historical standpoint, in fact, the county was under an obligation to undertake, not that they were requested, they were under an obligation to undertake or overtake the assessment process if it became apparent that they were not going to meet the deadlines that Joe required. And we had a prior ordinance that had been passed in 2008 or 2007, somewhere in that neighborhood, where the amounts had been set at 50% or 70%, depending upon. And we don't know why it was not 100% then.
Okay.
So it allowed those municipalities to pay less, 70% instead of the entire price, or 50% instead of the entire amount. So we're closing that loophole so that they're required to pay 100% of whatever it would cost us to undertake to do their work.
And Mr. Chair, one more.
Yes, ma'am. By the way, this is Lisa Champoli that I called on, our chairman of the Finance Committee, and I'm so glad she's here today to ask these questions.
So then will we send out a notice to all the townships and this and that this ordinance is going to go into effect so they are aware that...
They were actually all warned about it at the assessor's meeting that we have
Oh, okay.
In January. that there was some increase coming, but we will send them a notice of what it's going to be. I think it might. If I may go back to.
Yes, please, Mr.
Donovan.
I wasn't
able to attend the meeting where we discussed this last time, so I went and listened to the recording about two or three times, and I had some things that I wanted to clear up. The first thing is the Godfrey Township Assessor came here the last meeting and told you guys that we were under contract with her to do the work at a certain rate. There is no contract. There never is a contract with any township. The deal is, if they don't do it, by law, we're required to do it. We contact them, we say, so that, because if I waited until June when Godfrey is supposed to turn their books in, and Godfrey didn't turn their books in or didn't complete the work, then I have to start in June to do all of Godfrey. So there's no way I could get it done and keep the tax cycle on a regular basis like it is. So we contact them way ahead of time and say, hey, are you going to do your quad work this year, or do you not? And they say yes or no. Godfrey was one that said no. So a little over a month and a half, almost 2 months ago, we started on Godfrey's work. When she said we had a contract, there's never been a contract. I guess what she was talking about is she called up and said, are the costs going to be similar to what they were before? We said yes. That was before we had this discussion with the Tax Cycle Committee and before there was any change in the resolution. There was also some discussion about the $75,000 that's listed on the back there about Godfrey. That the county picks up all $75,000 of that. That's half of what it would cost for the Godfrey Township to be done. So at the time you guys were discussing it, you said, you mean we have to pay half of the $75,000? No, the $75,000 is already half. The county paid the whole $75,000. As far as the 2009 resolution, and Debbie may be able to help me a little bit on this, but in 2009, the county had probably 6 or 8 field men. We were basically doing quad work for every township in the county. Whether they had a full-time assessor or not, we were doing the quad work. So we had enough employees. We had, and whoever was Debbie or Mr. Harris, I'm not sure, decided that, you know, we should put some pressure on the township assessors to get their work done and not leave it all to the county at no cost. That's where this 2009 resolution came from. I think the reason that they did a partial cost is because it was new to everybody. They didn't want to throw it down everybody right away. And really, it's really done a good job of getting other townships to do their own work, because as of today, the only township that has a full-time staff and a full-time assessor that's not doing their work is Godfrey. Every other township in the county that has a full-time assessor is doing at least a part of their work, and most of them are doing all of it. So I think it was a good thing that they did. Whether they intended to come back later and make it 100% or not, I don't know, but it was a good thing. There was some question about the difference between the per parcel costs, and I don't have that one with me today, but you got it at the last meeting. Some of those per parcel costs were different on each township. Some of the townships undertake a portion of the work. They may have a field man or two that they can go out and do the field work, or we do the field work, they do the data entry, or at one time they were actually going out and just taking pictures for the quad. So we charge them a per parcel basis according to what work we did. Not we don't charge them every time we go out there. We charge them for what we did. Is it cheaper? That was one of the questions. Is it cheaper for the county to do it than the assessors? Probably, because we have a lot more staff than the assessors do. So I think if you broke that down, if everybody had the same staff, it would probably be very similar in cost. However, we have the software cost. We provide the software that each township uses for their reassessments. So even if they're doing all the work themselves, we are still providing the software for them to do it on. So that was another question. And then there was a suggestion that we hire one person to do each town. So like Godfrey, we would hire a person to do all of Godfrey's work for that year. I think that's kind of basically what this resolution is doing. We're doing the work for them, whether it takes one person out of my office or two or three people out of my office. The way the study was done in 2007 and 2008, it took into account the portion of the work each of those individuals were doing for that township. So I think those are all the things that I saw, that I heard on that tape, that I wanted to clear it up with everyone before we went ahead with the presentation.
So let me encapsulate. First of all, it sounds as if we move to this. I'm sorry, did I miss a question?
Yes, behind you.
I'm just right behind you.
Please go ahead.
I'm sorry. My only question was, since it's going to be sounds like a significant increase for the townships from what they're used to having to pay, I don't know if it would be possible to add something in where, since we're taking the money anyway, that if they don't pay what they're supposed to pay, that we can retain that? I don't know.
Well,
like they do with your taxes, if you're.
Let me speak to that issue because it really wasn't mentioned in any of the discussion. Mm-hmm. One of the facts is that they have 4 years to pay this.
Gotcha. Okay.
So, that's pretty nice grace period, I would mm-hmm. think. And so, basically, what the resolution says, you really need to take responsibility for your assessment cost, and that, you know, one township shouldn't do all their work and then pay for some other township's assessment. And it gives adequate time for the townships and or municipalities, if in a coterminous thing the township dissolves, to pay their bill. And currently, we are subsidizing different people over $250,000. And if Alton dissolves, it will be over $750,000. And that's really unfair to some people. So that's the long and the short of it. Would that be a fair statement? Mr. Dodderman agrees. I believe Mr. Ezra agrees.
I do.
And Mr. Parkinson agrees. And by the way, I want to thank so much Mr. Parkinson and Ms. Novosic and the discussion here about all this, because I think we have a good bipartisan working group in this committee, and I am so grateful for their input into this whole process. I want to clarify that. This is not a partisan anything. This is a bipartisan effort to ensure fair payment of assessment costs. Would that be fair to say, Mr. Parkinson?
Very accurate.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, ma'am.
One other question.
Yes, Ms. Champoli.
It seems to me that Godfrey citizens are paying for an assessor if they're not doing the work. That just seems odd. And if they're not doing the work of their assessments within their community. But is there another assessor or township out there that doesn't use our software for assessing? And
Alton.
Which is why the cost would have been $500,000. Not only would they have needed more men or more people on the ground, but they would have had to get up to snuff with regard to the new software.
Yeah, all their data would have had manually been transported over into our data system because it's not compatible. And they were on the verge of doing that and dumping that cost on us.
So, okay. I thought I had heard something of that nature, and I just wanted instead
of... Who knows if they were allowed to do that? How many other may say, well, you know what? If we can shirk our costs, why not?
Right. So if they go, their township goes away.
Yes.
That's what it is. It's not. It's their township, which is within their city limits, goes away. Then
they wouldn't have an assessor anymore.
See.
And there is a new statute that just went into effect in January 1st of this year that kind of stops that from occurring and requires a township, before it dissolves, to negotiate with the municipality. The municipality is under an obligation to assume all of the responsibilities of that township. The municipality can then either contract or not contract, depending upon what happens. They can literally contract with us, and we could take it if we wanted to, or Joe's office would have to assume the responsibilities they have on the townships now, because if they're not going to get their done in time. But the new statute that went into effect on January 1st requires the municipality to assume the responsibilities of the township that dissolves. all credit due. Joe found that. I did. He found it and sent it to me. So the result is essentially the same, but we're codifying it to make sure that we get paid the total amount.
100%.
Right.
Ooh. Yes. Which, as a finance committee chairman, I...
Makes me very happy. Extremely.
Mr. Moore.
Yeah, one more question. I was wondering, this may be a legal question, did we have the authority to say that we would provide free services to certain towns if they requested, and or now do we have an obligation to go back and ask them for the money that they or to pay for the free service we gave them?
Well, I don't think, and this is if you remember at our last meeting when that delay from Godfrey got up, we had a problem assessing it or putting it into place then because it would have been retroactively effective. Retroactive application is an incredibly difficult thing to do. The law does not favor it in any way, shape, or form, and we probably would lose if we try to obtain funds that we've already lost, if you will, for trying to gain for that which we've already for services that we've already provided. That's why we put it into effect February 1st, so that they know starting February 1st, notwithstanding what occurred before, whatever we do from that point forward, you're going to owe us 100%.
Okay. That's good. Good job, everyone.
Well, thank you so much for your compliment. It was really a team effort on all the members of the committee's part, which I'm so grateful for. Well, we've had kind of like a lot of preliminary discussion. I don't know if there's... I think Mr. Parkinson's been very involved with this. I don't know if you'd like to submit the resolution for our consideration, sir.
I will. I will make a motion to accept the resolution authorizing the billing of costs for township assessor services at the new rate.
Is there a second?
A second.
Second by Mr. Moore. Moved by Mr. Parkinson. Is there any discussion? I would like to note that I did talk to Mr. Michael and Ms. Nemacic before the meeting, both who, due to no fault of their own, could not be here today, and they both support this resolution. I would like the minutes to reflect that.
And I spoke to both of them as well, and they both said the same to me.
Thank you, Mr. Parkinson. Thank you, sir. All in favor of the resolution submitted by Mr. Parkinson? Mr. Moore?
Aye.
Mr. Parkinson?
Aye.
Mr. Chapman votes aye. Thank you. Okay, great. Now, I think we have gotten to the last portion of our agenda, presentation. I'm so glad that you could come today.
Sure.
And again, as I stated, staff and the board very much wanted to hear you. So the floor is yours, madam.
Thank you very much. And thank you again for allowing me to come and talk to you all. I really do appreciate the opportunity to spend a little bit of time with you. I do have some handouts. I have about 15. I think that's enough maybe for everybody to have one. If you wouldn't mind just kind of passing those around.
Now, I told our guests that there'd be about 10 minutes for the presentation, about 10 minutes for questions.
Right.
Thank you.
So, just to let you know, I'm sort of the local representative here. We mainly are dealing in Madison County. We are certified affordable housing providers. We're part of a nationwide network of folks that are doing this throughout the country. So you can see on the first part, we are about home ownership. That's what we are geared to be about. Now, who we are, if you go to the next page, you can see that we are part of that affordable network we talked about. We are involving both sellers, buyers, private lenders all work with us. We are nationally headquartered out of Atlanta, Georgia. And like it says, we are part of a nationwide network. There's about 500 of us strong, over 500 of us strong throughout the entire nation. And we do have a local license of the program to be able to operate here in Madison County. We have not expanded any further than that simply because the need has already been so great here in Madison County. That's where we're pretty much focused right now. The third page here talks a little bit about letting you know that we are a recipient. We have done work here over the last 4 years. Since 2014, we have received the D.D. Sanford Award. It's a community affordable housing award that we are provided, and we won to show that we are doing things very positively in the community. And that is awarded to us by the national headquarters in Atlanta. On the next page, so you might ask, well, why are we needed? You can see that, unfortunately, the sad truth is there's still about 80% of the population of Americans that really can't get qualified to buy a home and to get a home loan in their own name. That can be anything from loss of job, bankruptcy. 2008, of course, hit our community very difficultly, as it did many throughout the entire United States. We really were no different in that. And still, we are having some of the repercussions of that even from 2008. So this is why we still have a need in our community to help folks get into home ownership. On the next page, it talks a little bit about our current situation and sort of a solution. The first thing that we note here is it's kind of, unfortunately, it's an important fact that good credit is not really taught in our school system. Wrong, right, or indifferent, it really isn't addressed. And if I were just to ask a show of hands, how many of you know what the actual percentage is, maximum, that you should use of available credit such that it would not actually have a negative impact on your score? Does anyone know what that percentage would be?
Well, when I worked for the State Office of Comptroller, we did presentations that were similar, and we took a class every year with the Fed that told us to use between 15, never use over 15 to 20% of your available credit and pay that off every month.
Actually, you can use a little bit more than that. It's about 30% before it actually starts hitting your credit scores. But unfortunately, that fact is very unknown to most people out here in the population. And that and the numerous other things are what's causing many of the credit issues in our country right now. It's just a lack of education, right? A lack of knowledge. And unless you're in a situation like that, you might not have even known that fact as well, right? So because there's an incredible amount of understanding even revolving around credit and what credit scores are and the number of mistakes that actually credit reporting agencies are making on people's credit right now, you might have heard recently of the debacle with Equifax and the release of millions of people's private information that potentially is hacked. You know, those kind of things going on as well certainly can affect our credit scores as well. So it does block a large part of our community from being able to be in a homeownership position. So our mission is actually to try to bridge that gap between the homeowner situations right now and the eventual new loan that we help them acquire to prove the bank financing. Okay. Now, this is going to be involving and has involved a lot of steps for education of the individual. Obviously, they have to participate in the process of improving their credit scores. We actually help them do that so they can get in a position to qualify for a lower interest bank loan. That education and process and the score building actually does happen while they're living in the home that they're eventually going to be in a position to get bank financing for. What we need help with is lowering of that housing expense, including property taxes, which is why one of the reasons why I was here to talk with you folks. And that means if we can actually do that, that means more income actually being available in the community to be spent back in this community to help the community grow and flourish as well. And why is even that an important point? Well, because we are providing for the future for the next generation. So we need to make sure that we're planning now to put place things into place to allow our future generation of children and their children to be in a position to be better off than what we are today. Okay? So that's our current situation. The next page talks a little bit about home ownership and why this is right now such a sad situation, not just here but everywhere. The statistics have shown us that there's about over 100 million Americans right now that don't live in a home of their own. Take that into account, then a portion of that, the 43 million, the reason that we have such a high number of that is 43 million of those people have scores less than 599. Now, in order to qualify for a bank loan, you need typically a median credit score of 640. So we're significantly lower than what the national average or what the average has to be to qualify for a bank loan. And what our program is geared to do is to change that, okay? And we are doing that literally one family at a time. And it is a very detailed and involved process to do that. But we're also not typical landlords that you might have run across in the past. We're not typical property managers in the past because of the way that we structure our program and because it's really geared at educating and assisting our homeowners get into a better position. And our intention is for that occupant to really end up with home ownership. That is our goal. That's our mission.
Can I ask a question right there?
Sure, absolutely.
Who actually owns the house?
Actually, we teach each of our prospective residents to end up owning the house in trust.
Yeah, but who owns it while they're living there?
A trust owns it, which we teach them how to do as part of their estate plan.
Who manages the trust?
Yeah, I am the trust manager for most of those properties.
Okay.
So it's not a bank.
No.
Give money. It's you.
No.
Your trust.
It's these are individual trusts per property, and I function as the trust manager for most of those property or the co-trustee.
So technically, you own the property until they own it.
No, I do not.
You're in charge of the trust.
I'm the trust manager. There's a very fine line distinction between that. The actual property is owned by the trust. I'm only the facilitator of the property in the program.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Mike.
So you're the facilitator of the trust. You're entitled to make the decisions of what's in that trust during the time up until the point where they're able to obtain a loan and purchase the house from the trust.
Exactly. Okay. Now, they can leave their actual property in the trust and set up for them if they like.
No.
So that's a possibility as well.
Who are the owners of the trust? Is that a corporation? What is that exactly?
No, the trust itself owns it with a trustee. These are land trusts that are part, it's well known here in the state of Illinois, so these are land trusts.
Okay. So when this is a HUD foreclosure, all right, or it's a foreclosure on the market, and you bid on it openly, who does the bidding and who provides the money?
Usually a realtor gets involved that we have on staff that presents the offer to the particular HUD. It's usually HUD home store. Mm-hmm. I'm going to get into that here in a second. That's done on behalf of the trust, and then when we are ready for the occupant to get involved, then they get involved with the process at that point.
Where does the money in the trust to purchase the property come from?
It's all privately done, privately funded. We have no government funds to do that.
Okay, so it's a private corporation that provides the funding.
I would just say that it's privately funded.
Well, if we're talking about reducing taxes, I want to know whose taxes we're reducing.
You're ultimately reducing the resident.
Okay, but they don't own it at that time. The trust does. And the trust would be the one that's responsible for the taxes during the time that it is in basically a rentership. So who owns the corporation that's funding the purchase of these loans?
These are individually, privately funded individuals that provide the money up front.
And where do they profit?
They don't profit until the actual individual has gone out and got their bank financing. That's when the profit is actually made.
Okay, so when they actually sell the house to the person that's been living in it, that's when they get their profit.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
But they do get a profit. It's just when they get the profit.
Potentially. Now, there's no guarantee, right? Markets go up and down all the time. So the intent is to actually have our private lenders
Have you ever done this and lost money? Your statement would infer that you've done this and you could lose money, but you're not in business to lose money, so I'm assuming you must be making money or people wouldn't keep putting this money up.
I will say that the private lenders have been in a position to make money, yes.
And do you live in one of these houses?
No, I do not.
You do not?
No. I just simply work for the group that is actually providing this service here locally in the community.
And how many of these do we have in Madison County presently?
Well, that's been a fluctuating thing, and I'm going to get into the numbers of how many we've actually moved into home ownership here. I will get to that.
So you will provide Mr. Parkinson an answer to his question about how many of these homes or properties you currently have?
In our program, yes, I will. So let me just go on to the next one, which is talking about our mission statement. And our goal, as we talked about, is to transform lives. We're trying to get people into affordable housing. Now, let me explain what affordable means. Affordable does not mean low income. What we do is, and I'm going to get to this in a little bit, the affordability comes from their income, all right, not low income. It's based on their income is what we determine is affordable. And it's to empower families and individuals to actually enjoy what people come to this country for, and it's for home ownership. Okay, that's the goal. All right, the next page. So actually, how do we help the families? This is getting into some more detail, and how does this benefit the community? Our goal is to provide instruction on that home ownership and being financially responsible. Again, this is not really being taught in our education system. So, and unfortunately, this can take some time. It can take a year, maybe two, maybe three. It depends on the individual, right, and how willing and quickly they are to want to get into a better position. And again, it talks about here that the buyers are actually qualified based on their income, not on their credit score, because we already know from the statistics that their credit scores are way below what they can need to qualify for bank loans. So we don't use that as part of the qualification of the program. We have now, in answer a little bit to what you're saying, Mr. Parkinson, is about right now we've already helped 18 Madison County families get into a home ownership position because of this particular program. And we've added 25 more homes to the program between 2016 and 2017.
I have a question.
Sure.
How many... Apparently, you put 18 families into homes. Is that what you're saying?
Actually, more than that. There's been more than that in homes. What this is indicating is that 18 of those people, at least, have in the last several years been in a position to get into bank financing, which is our ultimate goal.
Okay, my next question is this.
Mm-hmm.
If how many of those people, I'm assuming they're making some sort of payment.
Sure.
And what happens if they miss a payment?
Well, that depends on where they are in our program. It could mean foreclosure.
In which case, if they miss a payment, that property stays with the trust.
Correct.
And they're basically kicked out.
Correct. Correct.
How do you determine?
I'm sorry. Let me finish that up. It really just depends, and we have to follow obviously local law, you know, with what we have to do in that particular case. So we're going to follow whatever procedures we have to legally in order to address that particular situation.
Well, I guess my question was, given the law, does it turn out that those people get kicked out of their house if they miss a payment? That was kind of my question.
Well, it's kind of no different.
I'm assuming everybody has to follow the law.
Yes, and what can happen is we have to follow the judicial laws here in the state of Illinois, which, you know, we have to follow foreclosure laws like anyone else does. And we have to follow those same rules. So, you know, missing a payment 1 month doesn't necessarily mean that you're gone.
So they're not subject to eviction. They have to go through, you would have to go through the foreclosure program.
Potentially, yes.
What do you mean potentially?
Well, like I said, it depends on where they are within the program.
Okay, so at a lower level, you could do an eviction, but over a certain standard, or a certain level of payment, then it becomes a foreclosure.
Potentially.
Okay.
Yes.
What is that payment level?
I don't remember the numbers right off that, and I didn't bring that with me.
Okay.
I don't have the answer to that to
so
you today.
Potentially, where they are in the program, being whether they're at a level of maybe 50%, they become foreclosure?
50% of what?
What the agreement is for the purchase price of the home.
It's not necessarily based on purchase price.
Okay.
And I don't remember all the parameters, but we do have a calculation that we use to do
that. But if they hit a certain percentage and they paid that much into it, whatever that percentage is, then it becomes a foreclosure, as opposed to below that, it would be you could just evict them.
I don't know exactly what that is.
It's a yes or no question.
What's that?
Is it true that at a certain percentage, if they paid more than that percentage, they have to go through the foreclosure process, they're entitled to be foreclosed on? If it's below that, it is merely the level of eviction.
It's actually the level of agreement that we have,
okay?
More so than it is a percentage of a purchase price.
Okay, so there's no set percentage. It's what's agreed upon in the contract.
Exactly.
Okay.
It's a contractual.
So they can either be evicted or they can be foreclosed.
Correct.
Okay.
If I could speak, as far as the foreclosure goes, foreclosure would only be relevant in the court of law if the person's name is actually on the deed. Otherwise, it would be the trustee who would have the ownership. So there would be no required foreclosure process unless the person's name is on the deed.
So then, if I understand correctly, Ms. Meyer,
yes.
Given what you just said, then if there's really no eviction and or foreclosure process, a trust could then say, well, you missed a payment. We're kicking you out of your house or evicting you from your house. Is that accurate?
Well, I would say that as far as the, you know, legality of the documents go, in our office, we are the record. So if whoever it says is the last holder of the deed is the owner of the home. Mm-hmm. And if that's a trust or if that's a person, that would be who the foreclosure proceedings would go against.
So if I may expound upon this.
Please.
If I have an understanding.
Mm-hmm.
There's obviously a contractual relationship between your company and the people that are living in that particular...
That's correct.
And so it's the language within the contract that defines what they can and cannot do with regard to the individuals that are living in the house and whether they miss a payment or not. So without looking at the actual language in the contract, we don't know what they could do, but they have a wide range of things that they could conceivably do. By missing a single payment or two payments or five payments, they could say, yes, you miss a payment, you're gone, depending upon the language.
And my understanding is each contract could be different.
That's correct. That's correct.
Good.
Absolutely. And I'm sorry, I didn't bring any, you know, I didn't think that was appropriate to bring the contracts with me. But because I really just wanted to give you a broad overview of what we're trying to do. So as we talked about, there's 25 properties that we did put in the program in the last 2 years. Most of those properties have come from things like we were just talking about with Ms. Meyer. Did I say that correctly?
Yes, ma'am.
Ms. Meyer. and that is the foreclosure process. We have had foreclosures that have hit our community. They're still happening in our community. So many of these properties actually were purchased in that manner. They were purchased as a competitive bidding situation on HUD Home Store. And these are potential properties that nobody may have wanted anyway. They may need some amount of repair. And so they were competitive bidding. They're actually on the MLS in the open market as well, and are available for purchase literally by anyone in that bidding process. The repairs that we do have to be done are done to the level of meeting occupancy inspections. And that's per the Revenue Code statute that's listed here. We do not overimprove the properties. Obviously, that drives up the expense. And remember, we're providing affordable housing for these folks eventually own the home. So they're not overimproved. They're improved to meet occupancy inspection standards. Yes?
Which could increase your tax, the trust tax on that property, correct?
Actually, per the statute, it does not increase it. The statute is very clear, if you read it, and it's not very long, that says if we've done things to improve the property to the repair level as normal maintenance and ongoing, not deferred maintenance, it's maintenance that needed to be going to actually, you know, keep the property in operating order, that this statute keeps that from actually happening. Property taxes should not be increased.
Let me ask this question. Have you ever purchased, say, one of these properties at $53,000 or $54,000 and then sold it for $100,000 or $105,000?
Usually the differences there is not that wide.
Usually?
No.
But that could happen.
It could happen. I would say, to my knowledge, it is not, since we've been doing the program, there's not been that big of a gap.
Can you give us a ballpark average?
If I were to guess, I would say that the property were sold for maybe $100,000, just to use round numbers, that the property might have been purchased all in for maybe $70,000 to $75,000, $80,000, no more than that. To give you a ballpark, if I were to guess the averages.
So 20 to 25%.
Okay.
Even 30% based on that. Good.
30, yeah. And so, the very bottom of that page, we were looking, does the community value increase in homeownership? And our buyers obviously do. And I've talked to a couple of different mayors. One was Mr. Hagenauer in Granite City. Another one was the mayor of Alton. And I do know that they do value homeownership in their community, and I think most of us would value that as well in our community. And certainly our buyers do want to be in that position. So what we're really doing looking here for you guys is how can government help us? So we're kind of looking for your assistance. And there's a couple of different ways. Well, first of all, why do we need your assistance? Why am I even here? And that next page is talking about those challenges. Okay, we face some challenges in solving this housing crisis. And some statistics that you may or may not be aware of is the state of Illinois right now is actually the second highest property tax state in the nation. We're next to only New Jersey, who's number one. And that means we're higher than the typical property taxes assessed in California, New York, and high property value areas such as that. Not probably something we really want to be known for. I wouldn't want to brag about that. So that is potentially a challenge.
May I ask you a question, ma'am?
Yes.
It appears that the trust is making a property, making a profit on these properties as per your own addition, your own guess. Could be 25%, as much as 25% you're making. Why are you, since it's owned by the trust, and not, if I'm understanding correctly, it's owned by the trust, it isn't owned by the people who are trying to get credit so that they can buy the house, and since it is a money-making project for the trust, why should the trust, which is profiting, get a break on its taxes?
Well, mainly because the payments, remember, that the actual buyer is making is a direct reflection on partly what happens with the property taxes, right? Because it's all factored in there. And essentially, if you look at Mr. Downman's paperwork, it says that the resident is liable, whether they're a leasehold property or otherwise. So ultimately, the resident does pay. The resident is responsible. The resident is ultimately the person that will benefit or not benefit from what happens with the property taxes.
Well, if the tax is based on a certain assessed amount, whether it would be a trust, and again, I would have to say that it appears that the trust owns that property, not the person paying you a payment doesn't own the property. Why should the trust get a tax break?
not to get into a lot of details about trusts and how they're structured, I am a certified trust specialist, and we do help people put this property in trust for their estate planning purposes. You're correct. The trust does own the property. However, it is the beneficial interest of that trust is where the resident comes in, okay? Because they're going to benefit from the beneficiary of that trust, as being the beneficiary.
Mr. Ezra,
I just have a question. So sure. while the individual is in that building and does not yet own it because the trust still owns it, who pays the property taxes for that for any particular year?
The trust does.
The trust pays it.
Okay. Which is a reflection from what the... It's just like in a bank loan, right? The bank is escrowing the potential property taxes that are then paid, but ultimately the homeowner or the resident is responsible for the payment of those taxes. This is really no different.
But is there a guarantee that if that tax is reduced, that would be passed along to those residents?
Absolutely reflected.
Contractually?
How do we know
that? In the contract.
Within the contract itself?
Yes.
Okay, so now let me see if I understand everything, sir. Let's say they get through the whole process. Basically, they're paying their own tax, which you would like to see reduced for them, although it's your property.
No,
and then
it's the trust property.
I
do want to be very clear about
trust.
But they're just using that as a...
You're managing the trust. When we say you're the trust manager.
You're the manager.
I'm managing the trust on behalf of the beneficiary.
We don't mean you personally.
Yes. No.
Right, okay.
Thank you for that clarification. Right. So now you sell it for a 30% profit. And it's the same property before you just sold it. And now you've just sold it for a 30% profit. It would seem to me that the assessment of that property would go automatically right away to whatever the payment was, because you've had two people in an agreement say it's worth this much, so now it has to be taxed at that. Let's say originally it was at $70,000, you bought it, and now all of a sudden you sell it for $105,000. Doesn't it the next day start being taxed at $105,000?
That becomes the fair market value.
And that's what I'm going to get to in a minute, okay? What we're talking about here is, though the property is not in a position of bank loan being sold, a market value may not have been assessed at that point, okay? The only value we have at the point is that at the initial purchase of the property, okay, at the time the resident moved in. That's the only record of sales price that we have that indicates market value, is at that particular moment. Nothing has happened after that. Yet.
Joe.
But I'm going to get to a second where, if you just let me finish, I think we'll address some of these concerns, and I definitely answer some more questions. But let me get some more of this here. Let me get some more of the challenges we've had, and that is we've had some inconsistent assessment valuations amongst the townships. For instance, Granite City may value certain features of a home differently than what Alton does. And then another township varies there, something a little different. Granite City doesn't like to include basements. Alton will include basements as part of their assessment value. So we have a disparity between what is happening across the various townships and what their assessing is. So that's the second one.
Is that accurate, Mr. Dodderman?
It definitely can be between Alton and Granite City.
Okay.
And I just use that as one example.
And that's just part of real estate market, is that correct?
Well, they're on two different systems as to what they value it at. So Granite City and Alton would be
And is there right by law to assess that way?
Yep.
If you have egress in Granite City, and they will accept it if it's finished and has egress. But other than that, it's just a basement, it's unlivable space.
Thank you.
And I'm just presenting what we see as a challenge of inconsistent assessments across the county, okay? Wrong, right, or indifferent, we see this as a potential issue. Foreclosures are still happening in this particular county. They do still account for 16% of the actual market that's going on right now. So they do have an impact on values in our community. I know that the assessors don't like to take that into effect, but they do actually affect it. And I've listed the source data in which I got that information from. The state of Illinois, another issue here, is taking over 2 years, that when the property taxes are appealed based on purchase price, it can take 2 years before we actually get a public hearing. That's an issue. Okay, why should we be waiting 2 years to get that due diligence? We have some inconsistent application of process for homestead exemptions. Owner-occupants are treated differently than leasehold properties. Our concern is, why should there be any difference? And that's what we're alluding to here. Owner-occupants basically don't have to do their homestead exemption reapplication until the actual property is sold. Why do we need to have a different? difference here. Owner-occupants also get prorated homestead exemptions. That's not available for potentially leasehold properties. And so we're just asking, why are we making a distinction between that? What difference does it make?
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I heard you ask five questions, very rapid fire, without allowing for any dialogue. So what I would like to do as the chairman, since I'm in charge of this meeting, is to ask if there's any responses to some of these concerns that have been addressed or brought to us by our guest.
I got a few.
Mr. Dodderman.
As far as foreclosures, we don't recognize foreclosures at market value. As you know, the properties that you're buying on a foreclosure have condition issues 95% of the time. We address those condition issues once they're sold, but we do not recognize the foreclosure as, and I don't see that being anything that we're going to do. Hopefully the foreclosures go down and we don't have to do that. State of Illinois taking over 2 years, you know, that's not anything we can do anything about. That's just the Property Tax Appeal Board. That's how far they are behind. The application of the homestead exemption, as far as prorated homestead exemptions, they only happen on new construction. That's the state statute. That's the only time they can happen. If you build a house and you occupy it in June of the year, we can give you a six-month exemption on your homeowners. But if it doesn't happen that way, January 1st is the statute. You must own and occupy the property on January 1st in order to get the owner-occupied exemption. And as far as reapplying each year, the reason we make leasehold properties reapply each year is because you may have a different renter in there four or five different times. As you said, the renter is responsible for the taxes. The statute allows us to require that annual reapplication so that, as you said, the lease is listed, the amount of taxes that are owed. So if that tax ever changes, the only way the tenant would know that tax changed is if they see it on the new lease that we require you to have, because you're saying that you do adjust their rent according to what the taxes do, but they would never know that because we don't mail them the tax bill, so they would never know that if we didn't. So in order for it to get an occupied, an owner-occupied exemption, we have to know who's occupying it, and year to year that changes. And actually, it changes in the middle of the year sometimes, because we have seen where on some of your properties, as well as other leased landowner properties that are getting exemptions, the state requires that you notify us when somebody moves out or someone new moves in, and we know that's not happening. So at least if we require you to do it annually, we know who's in that property that for that year and who's benefiting from that exemption, because as you said, it's the individual that rents the property that's benefiting from the exemption and not the trust.
Well, I'm sorry, was there another question?
Yes, over here, please. You had, you know, you've been so patient and quiet, and I could see that you wanted to make a comment.
Wait. I just have a few comments.
Would you please stand? Thank you.
You say when you get these properties that all you do is make some repairs. And the assessors always want to come in before you make the repairs, and they want to come in after the repairs are done to see how much you've improved this, whether it was a total rehab or just maintenance, which there's a difference. And I think that's what the statute is allowing for. Maintenance, you don't reassess. If you rehab a house, you do. It totally affects the effective age, everything. So we know in the past that you haven't allowed these assessors in after that. You say they're occupied. Is there some reason why you wouldn't want to let them in? Or?
Well, quite frankly, how do I put this? We don't think that there's necessarily fair treatment about that. And from a privacy perspective, we don't feel it's necessary.
Well, see, it's our job to put a market value on these properties.
Yes.
And that's what we're trying to do fairly and objectively. And we can't do that, you know, unless we see what you've done. And we found pictures online that show what you totally rehabbed the house.
And that, well, that's your assessment.
And you say that you haven't. So,
and if I can expand upon that, am I correct when I state that when they have attempted to assess,
and used pictures that they had found subsequent to the date of the change, you have objected, indicating that there were copyright and or other rights that were being affected to stop the board from being able to make a proper post-sale assessment. Is that correct?
There have been copyrighted MLS photos that have been used in the assessor's
appeals process. And am I correct when I state that you have objected to and disallowed them to attempt to use those pictures to make an assessment as to the amount of a post-sale assessment? Is that correct?
Because there are copyrighted data that was violated.
I understand, and I apologize. Am I correct when I state that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, let me ask this question then. Would that even become necessary if you were doing what a representative from the Board of Reviews is asking you to do, that immediately upon making your small repairs, you allow them in to assess the property? This wouldn't even be an issue later on.
There has to be a fair way, doesn't there, for them to be able to make an assessment so that they can have an understanding as to what was done in comparison to the property before versus the property subsequent.
Well, how can you justify the resale of these prices of these properties with increases up to 74% over the original purchase price if there's been no improvements made?
And where are you getting 74%?
From actual sales.
Actual sales of what?
Of what you've sold.
Of what the trust has sold to the person that was in the house paying the tax.
Yes. Okay.
There's been a 74% increase according to your records. Is that accurate?
And then do you get an opportunity to reassess based on that market
value? You bought this property
for
$25,000 in 14 and in 16. You sold it for $95,000.
And again, the tax assessed value has changed at that point.
$18,500, you sold it for $70,000. $53,000, you sold it for $112,000. $30,000, you sold it for $55,000. So, you know, we're just trying to do the best job.
Are we doing the individual that bought the house a proper assessment by just going by the purchase price alone without having the ability to be able to actually look at the property and see what was done? I mean, there has to be a way for us to be able to get into that house or somehow to make an assessment to make sure that the purchase price is reflective and the subsequent taxes attached is appropriate for the individual who now owns the house.
Not to get into a big argument, but most people have assessed values related on sold like properties. Would you agree?
I suspect that's the way houses are sold, and that's how you make a determination as to the proper purchase price.
Correct.
But that doesn't reflect the amount of work that was actually performed.
But do you agree that the assessed value is based on the sales, market value, purchase, and sale?
Not of the individual property.
I know this, that I am in that business as well, and I purchase many homes that are on the foreclosure market, and I know that it takes a decent amount of money to get them up to the livable status of the ones I'm buying for $30,000. And I know that I don't get any tax breaks for the ones that I'm doing, and I've helped people the same thing, and I don't get any tax breaks. That's what I know. So.
Okay.
In the interest of time, 10 minutes, I believe, is up.
Yes. Well, what I would like to do is, you know, at this time, perhaps adjourn the discussion, with the exception of Mr. Moore's comment and or question, because we really are past our time. But I think that it has raised some interesting issues for all of our staff and for the board members, for our legal community to ponder and to consider. Mr. Moore.
I apologize, but I've been holding my question to the end because that's just the way I've been trained. And I'd
yes, sir.
Like to hear a presentation, ask my question. Now, I have one observation and five short questions. Observation is there's a lot of background and history and knowledge within this room that I don't have about trust and everything, but I still have five basic questions I'd like to ask.
Sure.
I think they're going to be pretty quick. First one is, whenever the buyer is filling out the paperwork, like a loan agreement or for the trust, whatever, is there a fee on there that says certified affordable housing provider? Is there a fee there that's cut out for you? Okay, so that's zero.
No.
That's, do you get any kind of special agreements with banks or the loan providers? Like, for example, a veteran's loan, sometimes he gets a lower or she gets a lower rate. Do you have any kind of special deals like that where you get rates lower than the market rate?
We work with a lender here in the community that can get exactly those kind of rates. Their typical mortgage broker or bank.
Exactly what kind of rates? Just what anybody can get or
sure.
a veteran can get?
A veteran can get them as well. They can get a VA loan. We don't
okay.
keep that from happening here with our program. Okay. Absolutely not.
Is there a minimum down payment you require for your buyers?
Usually it can vary depending on where they get in with our contract. It can be usually about a minimum of 1%.
So, no. Does a customer have to be a United States citizen?
Usually that is the case, yes. So, I don't know that we've had anyone that has not been a U.S.
citizen. So you don't check and see?
No, we do not.
So that's a no. As far as like stats of success, you track.
Let me go back for that second. What we do require is if they have a Social Security number.
Okay.
Most Social Security numbers require U.S. citizenship, I believe, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
So if they have one, yes, we do require that.
Okay. So I guess would that make you a citizen if you have a Social Security number? Is that correct?
Okay.
I understand for sure.
So I take that back then. So yes, if you require a Social Security card, then they'd rather be a U.S. citizen.
Yes.
The final question is on stats for success. Do you track your results over the years to find out if those people placed in those homes are still successful homeowners? They have maybe sold it and moved on, but they didn't foreclose on it after you set them.
Yes, absolutely. We track it.
And we've
had no failures.
Zero failures
after those 18 that I have successfully had.
Over 18, okay.
Over those 18, no one has been foreclosed.
I have one question.
Mr. Parkinson.
Do you have any issues in any of the communities that you have houses in where the community has complained about the condition of the property as it relates to their community codes?
No.
You don't?
I have a question.
Well,
Mr. Ezra.
Let me ask it again.
I'm sorry.
You don't?
Let me do one little thing. Granite City has been in a position where they have driven by, saw a vehicle on private property that had an expired sticker and wrote at the resident. So if you consider that as a violation of the condition of the property, I guess that would be yes.
Okay, but it's in plain view, so they have the right to do that, whether it's private property or not.
Right is a
they have ordinances that are placed, and you don't believe you have to abide by those, by what you just said.
I have a disagreement with that statute.
So you disagree with statutes, so you don't abide by them. Okay.
You're putting words in my mouth.
I have one question. Are you willing to include language in the contract between yourself and the purchaser that subsequent to the purchase, that somebody from the county be allowed to go into the house and be able to make a determination as to make an assessment with regard to the house? Are you willing to alter your contractual obligation between the trust and the purchase and the purchaser to allow the county assessor to be able to do that, to make a proper assessment of the property?
At what point in time are you asking?
After the purchase. Are you willing to tell the purchaser ahead of time and make them sign on the document, look, once this house is sold, you are under an obligation to allow at least one time the county to come in to make a determination or to properly assess the property for purposes of assessment? In other words, that would be part of the contractual relationship between you and the purchaser. They know that up front. Are you willing to do that?
I'd have to talk to our attorney before I could say I could.
Okay.
Say that.
I want to thank our guest for coming today.
Thank you. I didn't get to point out the very last part about...
We are finished at this time. And I want to thank all of you for coming and participating in the discussion. Do I hear? I would entertain a move.
Motion to adjourn.
To adjourn. Is there a second?
I have a second.
All in favor?
Aye.